hey, Joe Casaboni here, and I'm just letting you know that How I Built It is now Streamlined Solopreneur. So if you're seeing new artwork and a new name in your podcast player, that is expected and by design. The new name better reflects the mission and really what has been the mission of this show for the last few years, and I'm really excited about it. All the links in the show notes and howibuilt.it will still work, but the show also has a new home over at streamlined.fm if you want to check it out. Thanks so much for listening. Just how important is writing? According to YouTuber Mark Ellis, your career depends on it. And as someone who's grown his audience to 1 million monthly views in just a couple of years, he knows a thing or two. That's why he's going to take us through his process for creating content, repurposing, and how you can start. Look for these top takeaways. The fact that Mark starts his videos with a blog post highlighting the incredible importance of repurposing. The fact that his team has been crucial because they can do the things he doesn't have to do, so he can focus on writing, recording, and growing his audience. And listen for Mark's story about Medium and how he makes $2,000 a month from that platform, which is free to get started on. He's leveraging the reach on other platforms to grow his business. In How I Built It Pro, we talk specifically about growing his YouTube channel and about podcasting on YouTube. I am so excited for you to hear this episode, so let's get into it. Let's do the intro and then the interview. Hey, everybody, and welcome to How I Built It, the podcast where you get free coaching calls from successful creators. Each week, you get actionable advice on how you can build a better content business to increase revenue and establish yourself as an authority. I'm your host, Joe Casabona. Now let's get to it. All right, I am here with Mark Ellis of Mark Ellis Reviews. And Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited. In the pre-show, we talked about a lot of things. I feel like we're like not kindred spirits. That's a really weird thing to say to somebody you just met. But I feel like we have very similar journeys and outlooks and things like that. The first question I want to ask you, you have a combined audience of about 1 million people per month viewing your content across YouTube and your blog and Medium. How crucial is repurposing, or how, let's take a step back. How crucial is writing to that process?
It's massively important. And I think that surprises a lot of people because people know me as the guy on YouTube who reviews MacBooks and, you know, smartphones and that sort of stuff. But, and that is me. And the majority of that audience, that number that you've just quoted, which to me, Joe, is, as I was saying just before we started recording, is nuts. I can't get my head around it at all. Yeah. But that number is mainly made up, probably 85% of YouTube views, whereas the rest comes from my blog and from Medium and a few other places. Even TikTok, believe it or not. Again, going back to the question about the writing, if I didn't write, then I wouldn't have anywhere near that volume of an audience. And again, that might seem strange because the majority of my content that's being consumed is video. It's not written stuff at all. But actually, you know, inside baseball, behind the scenes, it is written stuff because that's where it all starts, basically.
Yeah. And so this is, I think, a crucial point, right? Because this is something I talk about a lot. I think the best YouTube videos are the ones that look effortless, right? Like, I mean, so you're a tech reviewer, right? We were talking about like MKBHD and Sarah Deechi. They're like two of my favorites. And it just kind of seems like, you know, Marquez like sits down and talks about the phone, or like Sarah just kind of like sits at her desk and has a couple cameras and just like riffs, right? But that's probably not the case. It's the writing and like the maybe storyboarding or whatever that makes it look effortless. And then the editing, of course, like the editing is really important. But when it comes to your videos, tech reviewing, I've reviewed mics. I don't really know what I'm talking about with mics, even though I'm like a podcaster. I'm not like an audio engineer. I'm like, yeah, this sounds good for podcasting. But like, there's a lot of stuff to cover, you know, when you're doing like a MacBook, you want to I'm sure Apple probably gives you, I don't know if Apple gives you the stuff or if you buy it your own.
I have to wait in line like everyone else, unfortunately.
Okay, all right. I was talking to somebody who like gets the embargoed stuff and I'm like, nice. Oh, you're, that's so cool and probably nerve-wracking. Like, well, like what if you like mess it up, by, like mess up the time zone or something? Like, are you blacklisted? but like there's probably a lot of stuff to cover. So like do you script your videos?
I do, but not in the traditional sense. So I think, again, people probably think that, I think using the example of Marquez, you know, MKBHD, that's a really good example because I was like you, actually. I remember, I'm a huge fan of his. I've watched him for years and years. And I used to assume, before I started doing this myself, that he did, like you say, just sit down and start, you know, what, in the nicest possible way, waffling off all of this really impressive stuff. And he doesn't. And we know he doesn't because he's done videos in the past where he's kind of gone behind the scenes. And he, when he gets a phone to review, he basically spends a week or 2 weeks using it and notes down all this stuff, puts it into a Google Doc. He has writers for him now. That's one important thing. He does have a writer. Yeah. And then he sits down in front of the camera and he's just very natural and he does it. I'm not at his league at all, but that's a very good example of how videos are scripted. Mine's a little bit different to his approach. Because because I'm a writer first, I always have been. You know, I've written for much longer throughout my life than I have made videos. Most 9 times out of 10, most of my videos start life as a blog post. So I write the blog post sometimes a week before, sometimes a month before. It could be, might be a day before, might be on the day actually. Then I turn that blog post into not really a script, but it's just kind of broken down into bullet points. And I don't read it verbatim. I have tried that. I've done the whole using a transcript and a teleprompter, which I did that for quite a few videos. And looking, I don't want to watch them. They're embarrassing because it's very robotic. And that's a real skill to be able to do that. I didn't quite realize. So I've kind of got away from that just to riffing off these bullet points from the blog post. So in answer to your question, they are scripted, but not in the sense that probably people think they are, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point and approach, right? I've tried using a teleprompter too, and it's just like not my favorite thing, right? Like if you're like delivering a commencement address, right? Or like whatever, like you're like the State of the Union or... I don't know if your prime minister does something similar where every year they get up
they
on
do,
stage.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, like maybe like that's like the appropriate, medium for a teleprompter, but, I just said medium. Spoiler alert. We're going to talk about medium.com soon. But like when you're trying to create a dynamic video, like a teleprompter engaging, you know, a teleprompter is just not great, I don't think.
No, I mean, I went into it really naively. I was a bit kind of, you know, brushed it off and thought, that'd be easy. Just put your iPad in front of you basically and read it.
Yeah.
And you start doing it and it's one of the hardest things I've ever tried to do. And then you go back and watch people who do it and have been doing it for years. Like you say, whether it be government people or, you know, news readers or other YouTubers who do use teleprompters, they're so skilled at what they do. And I just can't do it that way. It didn't work for me at all.
Yeah. This is another thing that looks effortless, right? Or like the better they are, the more effortless it looks. You know, you think about like, okay, I was watching, I don't know if you watched The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon at all. I watched the
YouTube
clips.
I don't watch it. I'm obviously aware of it.
So, you know, he does like the rehearsal, but there's somebody with cue cards, right? Which is like also wild to me that it's like 2023 and there's still a guy holding cue cards. I mean, I guess that makes sense, right? Because if it's like auto-scrolling and like you got to pause for laughs and stuff like that. But like, usually you would have no idea he's reading cue cards. And then like he got ahead of himself a little bit and like made a joke on the cue card that wasn't showing. And it was just like a reminder of like how good he and like other late night hosts are at like reading off of these cards or a teleprompter. You know, like you said, I tried it. And I was like, "Oh, this is I'm a good public speaker. I speak for a living." Then, if you're not reading at like, you need to like dial the auto scroll at like your exact speaking pace. Otherwise, like I get totally messed up.
You do completely.
Yeah,
And there's a small bunch of YouTubers who can just sit down and not have anything in front of them at all. I can't name any because you don't really know who they are, but I know they exist. I've even tried it myself and failed miserably, but the people who can do that are even more talented and they've just got that natural charisma and ability just to not even think about the camera and just go for it. But most of us can't do that. That's a very unique skill. But again, that comes back to why the writing's so important. You have to have something there in front of you, however you do it, whether it be a teleprompter or bullet points like I have, but there has to be something, definitely.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'll just add one more thing to this, right, is I create LinkedIn Learning courses, and they asked me to create scripts for all the videos, and they're like, you don't read the scripts though. Like, the scripts are just like so you know roughly what you're going to say. And I feel like that's blog posts are the same exact way, right? Like, you write the blog post, the writing lets you organize your thoughts, right? Like, so you're not just going like, oh yeah, and the GPU, oh, and the fan's kind of loud in the Mac Studio, or whatever.
Yeah, and the other thing it does, it keeps it fresh in your mind. So if I have written a blog post the day before I start filming the video for that, it's there. I can remember it. And you've made a really good point, actually, about covering tech stuff, particularly Apple. So most of my channel and most of my content, actually, is about Apple stuff. And love them or hate them, one thing they do really make very hard work for people like me is the number of acronyms and letters and numbers. You know, if you want to buy an M2 Pro 16-inch MacBook Pro with the M2 Max Pro, I've got that wrong already. You know, there's so many different letters and numbers and things. And I can guarantee, Joe, most of my videos, I'll freely admit, hold up my hands, have got one or two errors in there. You know, I've misquoted the processor or the memory, whatever it might be. People always pick up on that, as you can imagine. But
of course.
But again, that's again why you've got to spend a bit of time, like you say, organizing your thoughts, getting it down onto paper. Unless you're really confident in a topic, if there's something that you've... There are certain products, actually, that I've reviewed where... I've reviewed them several times. So if it's a pair of AirPods Max, for instance, I've made lots of videos about the AirPods Max. I could probably just about sit down without a script and talk about them in relation to a different pair of headphones relatively confidently. But that's only because I've done it again and again and again. It comes back to the consistency and the repurposing of the content about those particular headphones. But generally speaking, yeah, you've got to spend time getting your thoughts out and working out what you want to say.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, if anybody's tried to record a YouTube video just like off the cuff, right? I think I'm good at speaking off the cuff. Like, I've done like 400 podcast episodes. And like, I'm generally good conversationally, but like sitting in front of a camera and trying to craft a narrative on the fly is hard. And so like, usually the first... like A-roll, right, that I record for a video is just garbage, right?
Oh, mine too.
This is where I should have written it down. And so now what I've been doing is, and this is going to kind of lead perfectly into our conversation about repurposing. Now I will, well, I'll scour old newsletters and blog posts because now I have like years worth of those. But if I create something from scratch, I will make it as a LinkedIn post first. Because those are like pretty punchy, pretty short, to the point. And then I take that and I turn that into an outline for a podcast episode.
Yep.
And then I take that and I turn that into the skeleton of a blog post. And so like my ideas are organized. My podcast is a mini podcast, not this one, the other one. And so I'm getting the thoughts out on paper, right? And so if I ever lose track of where I'm going, I know I can, first of all, easily edit that out, but also like find the thread, right? Tom Webster calls it the red thread. What are you trying to talk about this whole time? You mentioned repurposing. Let's talk about that. What is your, first of all, tell me, like give me the elevator pitch for anybody who's not sold on repurposing, and then tell me your process.
Yeah, definitely. So I saw something recently on Twitter, and I wish I could remember the two films, but it doesn't really matter because the same thing applies. So someone posted it was one of the films was The Jungle Book, and it was the original Jungle Book. This is related, I promise. Doesn't sound like it is. But it showed a sequence where the character was walking across the screen, like an animated... I don't know if you've seen this, Joe, but it's really...
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
The character's walking across and they then show another Disney film where
This is Robin Hood.
That's it, Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely different film, completely different character, but they're doing the exact same animation. And I think the tweet, I won't name the person who tweeted because it's not fair, but the person who tweeted it said, you know, this is, you know, my entire childhood's a lie. They've just taken this exact same animation and copy and pasted it into a completely different film. And I replied to that tweet and said, if you think this is the only example of content repurposing at a very big level, a very high, very famous level, then your entire life is a lie, because it happens all the time. And my eyes were open to this when I started my career as a marketing person several years ago. It became very clear very quickly that to do any kind of content production, you have to repurpose stuff. If you don't, you'll be sitting around for weeks, years making things, and you'll never get anywhere. So everything, pretty much everything that arrives on the screen for my brand, for Mark Ellis Reviews, whether it be a blog post or a video or a link, you know, I'm doing stuff on LinkedIn as well, and certainly things like TikTok and, you know, all of my YouTube shorts and all that content has started life elsewhere. It's something else. It's that classic thing about, there's only seven notes. My mum's always said there's only seven songs, there's only seven types of food that you can eat, and it's true. Yeah. Actually, it's just, everything else is just a remix of that one, that little small bunch of things. And when you get into content, when you get into creating content, you have to accept that it's not cheating. You know, that Disney example, it's not Disney cheating, it's them being a business and having to get this content out. No one's going to notice that unless you have the same video playing side by side. No one does. Kids don't do that, and that's what that stuff's for.
Right, not to mention, like, Jungle Book came out in 1971.
Yep.
I'm a Disney buff, so
well, you know, like, in that case.
Unlocked. 71. Robin Hood came out in, I think, the early 80s. That era was lovingly called the Disney Bronze Era because it was not a good time in Disney's history, and they did reuse a lot. But, like, Robin Hood was one of my favorite animated films growing up. Mm. And, like, I don't care today that they use the same stills from The Jungle Book, or, like, that Little John is Baloo. Like,
doesn't matter, does it?
Character. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's, yeah, you're telling an interesting story, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what this is all about. What I do is telling stories. It's not quite as interesting as The Jungle Book or exciting as The Jungle Book, but it's telling stories about tech. And again, that comes back to repurposing the content. And you asked about my kind of process for this, like my technique for this. So it is very simple. It's a case of planning. I don't plan out too far because I can't, because I work in the tech industry where things change very quickly. I don't always know all of the releases that are coming up, so I have to, you know, leave a bit of space. So I typically plan at the very most a month ahead, but that's quite far ahead for me. So probably 2 weeks. And I'll start by planning out my weekly blog posts. So for every week, Monday to Friday, I write on both. We'll come on to this later, I think, but I write on both my own website and Medium. And then I do 2, sometimes 3 videos a week on YouTube. And as I mentioned earlier, the writing is the starting point. So, you know, I wake up fairly early. I tend to write quite early in the morning because that's when I somehow manage to get the words out. And do that each day. What I do have people that help with this. So I have recently invested in some help externally from a publishing perspective. So everything is still created by me, but the publishing of the blog posts is done by someone else now, because it was a very kind of, you know, it's a very similar procedure each time.
Yeah.
They do that. They upload it into Medium and do that as well for me. So it arrives on, you know, fully formatted and published. It then gets shared onto Twitter. It gets shared as an Instagram story. I might, like you said, I might then turn the blog post into a tweet thread possibly, or a LinkedIn article. I occasionally use ChatGPT for that, which, shock horror, but this is one of the ways that you can use it creatively. You know, you're taking your own work, you're getting it to break it up quickly for you into a bunch of individual tweets.
Oh, that's so smart. That's so smart.
That's not my idea, by the way, but I had that same reaction when I saw someone else doing it and thought, oh God, that makes so much. Because before that, I was getting the blog post, copying it into something else, pressing enter. And
yeah, like Typefully or whatever. Oh, and then God, yeah. Like, yeah, right.
It takes forever.
That's terrible.
Yeah. And the whole point of content repurposing is to make it simple and quick. It's got to be quick. Otherwise, you're wasting time. So it goes onto the social sites. And then it gets turned into the video. But I don't stop there. So the video for YouTube gets created, and that'll be 8-10 minutes, whatever standard YouTube length, gets uploaded, published, great stuff. But then I get someone to break up the video into normally 3 or 4 shorts. So he takes the original video, chops them up, gives me, like I say, 3 or 4 shorts back. they get then uploaded to Instagram, TikTok, YouTube Shorts, those three platforms. So from one video, you've suddenly got, God knows how much more content on these short form platforms. And consequently, an awful lot of views. So you're adding, you've got the YouTube views, but then you've got the TikTok views and you've got the Instagram views. And just very quickly, going off on a slight tangent with TikTok, this is a really good example of where I've used content repurposing to build an audience very quickly on a platform that I haven't done much with. So back in August last year, I didn't have a TikTok account at all because, you know, I'm 41 and don't understand it at all. But I knew that I had to get back on it and do something with it. So I started the TikTok account and thought, all I'm going to do is repurpose, chop things up, put it on it and not think anything about it. I've now got 9,000 followers on there, which is crazy.
Wow, just from repurposing.
Most of it's repurposed. Some of it is me walking around with the phone talking. If an idea strikes me, the great thing about vertical content is you can just shoot very quickly and upload it. Yeah. But 90% of what's on there is just chopped up from YouTube videos, which some people will say is not a good idea. But
yeah, but I want to key in on this, right? Because I had a couple of TikTok experts on probably like a year or so ago on this show. And they were great, right? Rebecca Simon is one of them. And I forgive me, the gentleman guest who came on, who was also really good. But, you know, like they kind of prescribed the same thing. Pick a day, shoot, like pick five shirts, record a bunch of things, and then like schedule it all out. And I'm like, I don't want to do that, right? Like,
That's a lot of work.
Yeah. And like I'll record TikTok video. I don't use TikTok. Is one of those other things that I like, you know, don't use because United States China relationships. But you know, let's say Reels. I usually like record, like I'll get a thought on my cigar walks every afternoon. I take a walk with a cigar.
Nice.
A very healthy person. but like usually I'll record it then. Like I'm walking, I'm sitting at this point, I'm smoking a cigar and I'll give some podcast advice. That's the kind of content that works for me. So like the fact that you're like 9,000 followers on TikTok, mostly repurposing some of these like quick vertical videos, I think it shows that like as long as your content is good and resonates with people, like you don't have to follow the formula.
You really don't know. And that idea of doing those kind of, you know, bringing in loads of different shirts and that can work, but it's just a lot of work and you don't need to do it.
And maybe if TikTok is your primary platform, like, right? Like,
absolutely.
I'm sure like the people who are on TikTok are like listening to your process going like, geez, like writing a blog post and then recording an 8-minute video, like that's so long. Like I'm just going to upload my TikTok videos to YouTube.
And they probably look at what I'm doing with TikTok and Reels and think that's a bit cheap because it's just chopped up videos. And to a degree, it probably is. It's a very quick way of building an audience, but I don't really care. If it brings in the numbers, I get a lot of terrible comments, but I get a lot of nice comments. I've got 120,000 likes on TikTok. I didn't have those back in August. It's been very easy to get them, really. I say easy. Obviously, all this comes from content that I pour a lot of work. I should kind of confirm this, that I spend a lot of time on my YouTube videos. I'm a videographer by trade. I was before this. And okay. I'm the sort of person who does lots of little things that people probably don't ever notice, but I know I've done it. So I take great pride in the work I do. But that pride, it doesn't disappear, but it does kind of evaporate a little bit by the time it gets to TikTok because it's just a case of these people are like this. It's getting them talking. I've got people arguing between themselves in comments between Samsung and Apple fans. Great. That's brilliant for the brand. Let's make it simple.
Yeah, I love that. I'll also say like, you know, I mean, maybe the podcast community is a bit more polite unless you talk about like the Blue Yeti. but I was like 9 to 5 Mac just redesigned their site and I'm pretty sure I know the agency who did it from my experience in the WordPress space because the CEO of that company like shared the site. And I'm like, why do you care if they redesign unless you did it? Hmm. And then I'm reading the comments and they're like, the old site was better. This all sucks. And I'm like, if I ran an Apple, like if I ran 9 to 5 Mac, I would shut it down and like never go on the internet again. Like Apple, mean Apple fanboy comments are like some of the worst comments.
They're not as bad as headphone people. If you want to get really roasted, review a pair of headphones and say something nice about them. Because the people that don't like those headphones will come after you with, not literally, but with digital pitchforks. They are brutal. I don't know why, because they're just headphones. Who cares? But they are absolutely lethal, those people.
That's wild. And that's like, you know what? Most people probably won't be able to tell the difference. Like,
not really.
I consider myself an audiophile a little bit. And like, if I did like a blind test between like the AirPods Max And, you know, well, I got like the, I could probably tell the difference between these two because these and the AirPods Max are always on my head. But like the new Bose Quiet Comfort, whatever one, the ones that don't suck, right? Yep. There was like the ones that sucked in the middle of the ones, two quiet, yeah.
The 700.
Yeah, exactly. I probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Or maybe like if I was listening to Apple Music, maybe, right? Because they like do that. But like if I'm listening to Spotify on both of them, I'm probably not going to be able to tell you which switch.
No, that sums it up completely. It's the same thing with a lot of smartphone comparisons and laptop comparisons. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Amazing. So this has been great. Your process is very cool. It's, again, very similar to my podcasting process. I want to touch on, well, first of all, I want to touch on going back to The Jungle Book versus Robin Hood. First of all, neither of those movies were original ideas. Like those were
books.
And like if those people are really worried about their childhood, like just like blow their mind and be like, also, what The Lion King is Othello. The Lion King is Hamlet. Yeah. Othello.
It's one of the two, isn't it? I think it's Othello.
It's one of them. Right. Yeah. And they'll be like, what?
And you can guarantee Shakespeare stole it from somewhere else.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Like you said, there's like seven ideas, right? There's a great video by Axis of Awesome. I don't know if you've heard of them. They have a song called Four Chords. And they just play these four chords and then just start singing a bunch of popular songs.
I have heard that.
They're all the same song. They're all the same chords. Yep. But it's the story that you tell. That's the important part, right? And so writing is super important to your process. You're repurposing your content, creating these videos. I love that you're sharing clips. I think something that I don't want to get lost in this is that you do have a team of people. A small team. I have the same. I have a podcast editor and a VA. And so my VA will add everything. I'll like upload these podcasts for the members and for general consumption and things like that. How crucial is your team to your process?
Really crucial. And to be honest, I've only really invested in the team, Joe, this year. So up until probably December last year, the only thing I had really externally was an accountant, a bookkeeper, and a PR, a couple of PR people.
Interesting.
Yeah, they've been fantastic. They've been very, very valuable.
This is how you got booked on this show, I think, right?
It was. Exactly. I wouldn't be sitting here now, actually, if you hadn't spoken to Kate, who's my PR manager.
Well, I'll tell you, Kate's pitch was good because I'm really selective when I get reached out to.
She's doing a good job then.
Yeah, like when podcast bookers reach out to me, they're usually like crappy.
No, that's why I employ her, really. But yeah. I don't employ her, but that's why I use her services. Yeah. But that's pretty much all I had up until the start of this year, really. And I got towards the end of last year and looked at my kind of review of 2022 and thought, I'm spending way too much time doing things I shouldn't be doing. I made 2023 the year that I was going to get the help that I needed, really, with this. And same as you, I've got a VA now. And I've only had the VA up and running for about a month, and it's made, you'll know this, it's made such a difference. All the things that I did every single day, whether it be, you know, publishing blog posts or some of the things that I mentioned earlier, actually, they are done by the VA. And I had that kind of horrible thing where you think, I've got to let go of this stuff. And I wrote these massive procedures for them, which I can guarantee they looked at and thought, we don't need to know what step 36 is, you know, what's this guy on about? And they've done it, and they've done it better than me, much better than I could do it. They do it quicker. It doesn't cost me very much. And I've suddenly got this time back to invest in content. I've got those guys doing that. And then I've got, like I mentioned earlier, I've got I've got two people who do the podcast edits. So I've got a podcast as well. That's edited by someone now. And the other guy does the chopping up of the short form content for TikTok and Instagram Reels, etc.
Nice. Are you editing your YouTube videos yourself?
I am. That's one thing I haven't given up. And it's one thing I don't really want to give up at the moment. Going back to Marquez, who I am a big fan of, as you can tell, I keep referencing him. Yeah. He only very recently has got his own editor in. And he's still doing quite a bit, from what I understand, he's still doing quite a bit of editing himself. This is a guy with, you know, 11, 12 years experience on YouTube and 15 million subscribers. Right. And he didn't want to let go of it because he enjoys the process. He's created it. And that's pretty much, I'm not nowhere near as big as him, but that is the way that I approach the editing as well. It's where I build the story for the YouTube videos, really.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. You know, there's like all these, one of my favorite stories was how Star Wars was saved in the edit.
right? And like the edit is the place where you get to, if you shot things differently or you want to add this specific B-roll, that is the place where you get to tell the story.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important. If it's something that you like to do, then you should do it, right? I hate editing my podcast. And I hate editing video. I use ScreenFlow, and like I just recently learned about the I've used ScreenFlow for over a decade. And I just recently learned about what's it called? The smash delete or whatever it's called.
I don't use ScreenFlow, so I'm not sure. But
oh man, it's like you delete a clip and then it brings the other two pieces together automatically.
So it's like a magnetic timeline that you get that in Final Cut Pro, very similar.
Right.
To that.
And I'm like, surely ScreenFlow has this, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. And so I would delete a clip and then just like drag. And I'm like, this is like doubling my process. And then like I was watching David Sparks use ScreenFlow. And he like, I think it's called Smash Delete or whatever. And I'm like, where has this been?
In ScreenFlow
the whole time.
Yeah. Crazy.
So like, you know, it's not my favorite thing. But I think this is super important. You know, my VA, like she proves her worth. Every time I'm late on an episode and I'm like uploading it over the weekend and I'm like, God, what do I have to do? I go back to our documentation now.
The thing that you used to do, you have to teach yourself again. Yeah,
and like the documentation was created because I recorded myself doing it and narrated what I was doing and then had her transcribe and write out the steps. And now I barely remember that I need to do these things now. And it takes me so long and I'm like, God, this is... She's totally worth the money I pay her. She's worth more than the money I pay her, probably. So I think that's super interesting. We've been talking for about a half hour. I want to get to what I think... I don't know. I can't say this is the most interesting. Especially because in the pro show, we're going to talk about growing your YouTube channel in a very competitive space. I would also love to get your thoughts on YouTube entering podcasting. Because this is something that I've been thinking about a lot. You mentioned medium.com in our pre-show, and you've been posting about that on LinkedIn. I was just recently encouraged to start writing on Medium again, medium.com. I'll say medium.com since I used like Medium the other way before. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that, right? Because you have your own website, you have YouTube, and you're publishing to these other platforms. And coming from the WordPress space, like we've always viewed Medium as like the enemy, like the hosted platform who could just take our content and paywall it if they want. So give me a little rundown of like how Medium works for you.
Yeah, well, firstly, Medium itself. I mean, a lot of people don't seem to know what Medium is, but whenever I kind of speak to someone and they say, what is Medium? My response to that is generally, you've probably read something on Medium because it's got such high search authority on Google. If you search for something, you'll see a Medium article somewhere in that on that first page. But you wouldn't know you're reading on Medium unless you knew what to look for. Right. But it's just a blogging platform. And like you say, it's very similar to WordPress, but only to a point. So you know, WordPress is this much bigger thing that you can, you know, kind of turn into whatever you want it to be. It can be a full website, it can be just a blog, it can be all sorts of things. Whereas Medium is specifically a blogging platform. But the difference between Medium and something like WordPress is that Medium has I think it's around about 700,000 members that pay to use Medium. So they pay annually about $50 or something to read it. And you know, without that subscription, you can read a certain number of articles each day, but it runs out after a while. So it's got this ready-made audience, and it's huge. It's a massive audience. And on top of that, because it has such good search authority, you have 700,000 members, but you also have a huge number of kind of inbound people coming in from Google searches. So it's a huge website. And for writers, it's a massive opportunity. And it's a bigger opportunity than most people realize, I think. That's the thing which... when you start talking to journalists, I've done this quite a bit recently, you know, journalists and students and people who do what I used to do for quite a while, which is write blogs for commercial reasons, you know, for other businesses and that sort of stuff. When they hear what you can do on Medium, excuse me, which is basically writing about stuff that you enjoy and potentially getting paid for it, which we'll come on to in a minute. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's really freeing. And going back to what you were saying about WordPress, I know we talked about this a bit in the pre-show, which surprised you, but this is a very common misconception that WordPress and something like WordPress and Medium kind of are this kind of warring faction. You know, they're kind of competitors. I use Medium and WordPress together, and without both of them, I wouldn't have got anywhere near as big an audience as I have done. And the reason for that is that my publishing process starts on my website, which is hosted hosted on WordPress.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's been a long day. Hosted on WordPress. I start the blogging process there. It gets published on my WordPress site. When that's done, it's published and I've shared it and done all the stuff with it. I take the URL from the WordPress blog post, and then Medium has an import tool. So you basically go into Medium, click on import, pop in that WordPress URL, click import. You have to do a bit of formatting because it misses a few things out, but not too much. And then you hit publish. And then basically you've got the same blog post on your website, WordPress, and as you have on Medium. Identical. Occasionally I'll change the title just to... Sometimes certain titles work a bit better on Medium than they do on my website. Yeah. But it's the exact same content pretty much. Same images, same text. And the first thing you think, and I thought this before I started doing it, is, hang on a minute, duplicate content. Yeah, Google's not going to like this. They're going to look at this and think, right, his website is going to be pushed down search rankings because it's got duplicate content. We will favor Medium because Medium's got, it's just massive. Marketless reviews is tiny. Doesn't work that way at all. And the reason it doesn't work that way, and being a web developer, you'll be aware of this, when you import into Medium, Medium automatically inserts a canonical link, I think that's how you pronounce it, to your site. So it basically tells Google that the original attribution for this work is the website that it came from. Leave it in peace, let it do its thing. And to date, basically, that's meant that I've been able to build two separate audiences, one on my website, one on Medium, with the same content. And crucially, if you're running a business like I am, I'm earning revenue from both of those sources. So, and I don't mind talking about the numbers at all. On Medium, I don't earn below $2,000 a month on their partner program. And on my website, it averages between $1,500 to about $2,000 per month on AdSense revenue. My website is full of ads. I'm slightly embarrassed about it, but it does work at the moment, so I'm leaving it as it is. I don't mind admitting that. But you suddenly got there, you know, $3,500-$4,000 worth of revenue. And it's a classic example of repurposing content in a way that most people aren't aware of.
Wow, that's incredible. And like you said, the canonical marking is really important, right? Because again, like you said, you can, because there are people who will like share content or republish content and repurpose content. But like telling Google, like, hey, this is like, I call it the one true source, right? This is the one true source for this content. Send it here. Then like, yeah, Google's fine with it, right? Oh, all right. Well, at least you're recognizing that you're not just wholesale copying this. That's really interesting. I wonder if there's a way for me, I'm like a big automation nerd. I wonder if there's a way to do the import via Make or Zapier.
There probably is, yeah. I mean, if there is, let me know. But I mean, that's something that I'm getting my VA to do. They're doing that at the moment. Yeah. So I'm not doing that anymore. But that would be great. I mean, that would be amazing if you could do that. And also, just very quickly, I think I've heard a few people say that if you do it in the method that I've just described, in some way that will harm your rankings on Medium. But in my experience, that hasn't been the case. Unless I am leaving lots of views on the table, but the way it performs at the moment, I'm happy with. You know, I don't think that's the case. It seems to work very well. And I've established this consistent revenue and consistent views.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound like $2,000 a month is more than most people make on their writing.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That's like more than I earn on my LinkedIn Learning royalties right now, which is wild. So like...
Well, I mean, again, I mean, to put it into perspective, another, but in 2021, when I first started making that kind of revenue on Medium for that year, that the top month that year was $4,700, which is just crazy. And I had some fairly big, I mean, it's dropped a bit. I've not had another month like that. And that was only due to one or two articles really going viral. Mm-hmm. But it kind of demonstrates what is possible with a platform like Medium. And again, linking it back to your own website, if you've got a strategy for doing a bit of content repurposing between the two, and it, it works, and it's legal, and it all everyone's happy, then it's there to be had, really.
Yeah, and I think this is really important to point out, right, is you have the content repurposing strategy. You're using Medium as a platform, and they're bringing the audience, right? It's a lot like, I think of Medium as like a mall versus like having your own standalone shop, right? Like people are going to go to the mall for one thing, and they're going to see a bunch of other stores that they're going to go into. For our Gen Z listeners, a mall is a place with a lot of stores in one spot.
used to be quite a big thing.
Used to be quite a big thing. And yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, I would do this with Facebook too, right? People are like, oh, why are you building a Facebook group when you can like build your own community on Circle? And it's almost like saying like, why would you live in a town when you can live off the grid, right? Like people aren't going to come visit you if you live off the grid. It's harder to get to you that way, right? Whereas if you live in a town in an apartment building, like it's easy for people to come visit you. They're right there already.
It depends on what you're doing. If you're doing it for altruistic reasons, fine. But I'm doing this for a business. I'm always very honest about that. You know, you get a bit of flack for this in the comments and it makes me laugh because, you know, people say, oh, you're doing this for the clicks. Well, yes, because that is my business. I literally make content to be clicked. But if you're doing it for other reasons, fair enough. You might want to build it on your own platform, but I haven't got time for that. It'll take me forever and it would cost me a fortune. I wouldn't make any money. So I wouldn't enjoy it either. That's the key thing. I genuinely enjoy this. And that's the, going back to what we've said a moment ago about Medium and your own website, obviously, you're free to write about whatever you want. If there's an audience for it, then you'll find them. There'll be lots of those people. And you'll be, you'll be rewarded for writing about stuff that you enjoy. And that's very rare in having spent quite a few years myself, you know, writing for other businesses, writing things that I had no interest in whatsoever. You know, I've got friends who have been journalists and have worked really, really hard in that field. And that is a tough, tough industry that you don't particularly always enjoy writing about and you don't get paid very well for. This is completely different to that. You know, you're not being chased by editors, you're not being...
This episode is brought to you by Text Expander. Look, one of the best things you can do for yourself as a creator is become more efficient. And Text Expander is one of the best ways to do that. What could you do with more hours every month? Repetitive typing, little mistakes, searching for answers, they're all taking precious time away from you and your ability to create great content. With Text Expander, you can take that time back. I use Text Expander every single day for full emails that I send to sponsors and potential sponsors, affiliate links, common social media responses, and even podcast editing instructions for my team. On average, it saves me 34 hours per year just in typing. That doesn't include looking for resources or finding that one email I wrote that one time so I can reuse it. Here's how it works. Drop your commonly used content into a Text Expander snippet and give it an abbreviation. Then type that abbreviation and your content expands wherever you type. Text Expander is available everywhere from the PC to the Mac to Android and iOS. Show listeners can get 20% off. Just sign up at howibuilt.it/textexpander and become more efficient today. This episode is brought to you by LearnDash. Look, I've been making courses for a long time. I've taught at the college level and I've created curriculums for several different organizations, including Udemy, Sessions College, and LinkedIn Learning. When I create my own courses, there's no better option than LearnDash. LearnDash combines cutting-edge e-learning tools with WordPress. They're trusted to power learning programs for major universities, small to mid-sized companies, startups, and creators worldwide. What makes LearnDash so great is it was created by and is run by people who deeply understand online learning and adds features that are truly helpful for independent course creators. I love the user experience. And now you can import Vimeo and YouTube playlists and have a course created automatically in seconds. I trust LearnDash to run my courses and membership, and you should too. Learn more at howibuilt.it/learndash.
Let's talk about customer reviews for a second. Are you properly leveraging them for your business?
Customer reviews are pure gold. People are willingly telling you what they like, don't like, and want. I don't know about you, but I've spent a lot of time reading through my own reviews and my competitors' reviews to gain new insights. To be honest, it's sort of like drinking from a fire hose. That's why I love GapScout.com. GapScout simplifies this entire process by using AI to consolidate and analyze customer reviews across the internet. And not just your reviews, but the reviews of every business in your market. You'll gain insight into how customers in your market feel about your business compared to your competitors, where there are gaps, and the biggest opportunities to win more customers. GapScout continually monitors customer opinions and reports on the changes so that you can beat the competition and stay ahead of market trends. Getting started is easy. Go to GapScout.com to learn more. And be sure to join the mailing list to get the latest news. That's GapScout.com.
Having to chase invoices or pitch for work, it's just, you're your own publisher, basically.
I hear from a lot of people, like, when you start a podcast, don't even think about how you're going to make money, just launch it. And I'm like, no, that's like the opposite of what you should do. Like, think about how you're going to make money, even if you're not making money. You don't have to make money on day one, but like, think about how it's going to make money. Unless you just like setting money on fire, right? Like, then fine, do whatever you want. Buy Twitter for $44 billion. But doing it for a business and understanding that, it's almost like when people say, oh, that band sold out. They're on the radio now. That's the ultimate goal for bands. Like, yeah. Be on the radio.
Yeah. I always think about Calvin Harris with that. He's obviously a Scottish guy, and I've always admired him because I've always been a bit of a kind of bedroom music producer myself. But he's done it, and he used to work at Morrison's, which is again for the Gen Z, as it's a, in fact they know this, it's a shopping place in the UK. But he used to stack shelves in Morrison's, and now he headlines and he has residences in Las Vegas, and he's living his best life, isn't he? And he's a classic example of someone who you can look at and think, well, he's actually sold himself out there a bit because he's gone from creating these kind of little niche albums to working with Rihanna. And, well, hang on a minute, he's now working with Rihanna, and he's you know, fair play. You know, he's won in that case, hasn't he?
Yeah, right. Like, I had a friend in high school who loved AFI. Like, they got radio play for Silver and Gold. And I'm like, dude, AFI's on the radio. Isn't that cool? He's like, I hate them now. They sold out. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want my favorite band to be successful. I was like, I don't want the Yankees to win the World Series. That's selling out, right? Like,
what do people want? You know, it's
yeah,
bizarre,
right. So you want them to just be underground so, like, nobody knows about them. So, like, I don't. Then they'll stop doing what they're doing. Anyway.
Exactly.
End that soapbox. So much great stuff here, Mark. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I'm going to ask you this question. So actually, I'm going to phrase it like this. You and I both said in the pre-show that writing comes pretty easily to us, right? At least like getting that first draft out comes pretty easily to us. I had Dickie Bush on the show last year, Ship 30 for 30, which I personally feel is like a bunch of poppycock. Like, I don't think you need to like hustle, like that hustle culture and write every day or whatever. But I find it easy. Maybe there are people who need to build that habit first. What is your recommendation for someone who wants to start writing more regularly?
It's a bit of a cliche, to be honest, but it's the best thing I think that works. It's just write. When I say just write, I don't mean publish a blog post every day like I do, because that is hard work. And I should kind of clarify really that I didn't just start doing this in 2020. You know, like I've mentioned before, I've been writing a lot for many, many years. But if you're not in that position, if you don't find it that easy to write, just start writing for yourself, really. Because that's what most of us, I don't know if you did this, but that's what most of us did to begin with, whether it be writing your own novels as a kid that you think are going to be published or whatever. I know you ever read, and maybe you give it to your mum to read or whatever. Or writing your own, you know, if you're writing, journaling is a great example of, in fact, that is what I'd recommend doing. If you want to get into the habit of writing, and it's building the habit that is the hardest thing, but also the point of success is when you've made it a habit, like going to the gym. If you can make a habit of the gym, you'll be fitter, no question about it. So start journaling, you know, just every day. you don't have to do it at a certain time. People say, oh, make sure you do it at the same time every day.
Yeah. If you first do thing that, in the morning, whatever,
like, all that sort of stuff, you won't do it because it becomes a burden. Whereas if you just do it when you feel like doing it, even if you miss a few days, it doesn't matter. Just make sure you do it, you write as often as possible. And you will start to fall into it. Like I say, it'll become a habit. You'll start to fall in love with the process, and then you'll probably feel confident enough to start putting your work out there. Because that's quite a big thing. You know, we do this. This is what we do for our livings, and we're used to putting ourselves out there. But you'll know this. When you first do it, it's nerve-wracking. And when you first start getting a few negative comments back, it's always a bit cutting, isn't it? And it takes time to build up that confidence to do it. So just do it. Just write for yourself. Don't write for anyone else. That's the key thing, really.
Yeah. I love that. And it makes perfect sense, right? And like, that's, I have like a health coach, a friend who's into health, and we meet once a week. And I always think like, oh, you know, like I heard you're supposed to work out in the morning or whatever, like that gets your metabolism going or whatever. And she's like, the best time to work out is when you work out. Like, and so like the same thing, the best time to write is when you write. When I feel like a lull, or like I'm like not feeling motivated, sometimes I'll open the text editor and write. Sometimes I'll go play the drums because that's like energy. But like, you know, if you're like not sure what to do, just open a text editor and write what you're feeling at that time, right? Like it could just be that.
Yeah.
In the beginning, right? And you're getting into that habit. I love that. Now, you know, one thing we didn't talk about that was in your pitch and that maybe I want to touch on quickly, but this is probably like a whole other episode, is... did you do like any like SEO or like paid advertising to build your audience or anything like that?
No, none. I've never spent money on, for this business anyway, I've never spent money on PPC or SEO. I wrote about this recently on LinkedIn actually. And I kind of said that SEO is a waste of money sometimes. I've got great respect for people who know how to do SEO. I don't. I know the very basics of it, which I've learned over a few years, you know, working with other people who know far more than me. But I think when you're looking at the sort of thing that I do, it would have been a waste of money. It would have been a very silly spend of marketing spend, basically, putting that money into SEO. Because, okay, I might have ended up with a nice site with, you know, lots of search rankings and stuff, but the content would have been missing because I'd have been investing too much time and effort and expense in the SEO side of things. So literally all I've done with my website, I mentioned the revenue it's making from AdSense, that comes from roughly, I think it averages about between 4,000 to 4,500 unique hits a day. It's built that traffic purely from me, one, publishing regularly, two, adding things like meta descriptions to image, you know, alt tags and things, and making sure there's a keyword in the title and a couple of keywords.
Some of that
piece.
Like technical SEO, like organic SEO stuff.
But it's really common sense, to be honest, Joe. You know, SEO is common sense, apart from the real technical stuff, which I don't understand. The stuff that I do is just common sense. So it's literally been that. I've not done anything else. I've not paid for ads either, like you say. I've not boosted. I think I did try boosting posts on Facebook when I very first started. And what you realize is that when you do that, it brings in lots of traffic, but 99% of that traffic is completely useless because they've got no interest in you at all. You've kind of reeled them in for something. You've got your audience targeting wrong, and they've come in and they're like, well, what's this? And they've disappeared completely. So you've wasted $50 doing that. You know, it's a complete waste of time.
You've paid for them to basically like scoff at your content and leave.
Exactly, which is not good.
Right. I love that. That's great. Definitely a lot of food for thought for me. I got a ton of content in a bunch of places. I think maybe after this, the first thing I'll do is create a new publication on Medium called The Profitable Podcaster and import. I will do a couple and then I will have my VA do the rest. I think that's probably a good move for me. And then, like I said, I told you in the pre-show, like I was publishing to Medium, copying it back to my WordPress site using a make automation. And it sounds like I'll do it the opposite way now, where probably based on the source, I'll have it go into different publications. Because you can, again, if you're unfamiliar with medium.com, you can have multiple publications under a single user and publish to them, or just publish to no place, right? Like that was the confusing bit for me.
How it works, you have one profile on Medium, so you're the writer on Medium. Yeah. So for me, it's just Mark Ellis is the writer on there, but you can publish to different publications. That's probably what you're thinking of. So you can publish to your own profile, that's fine. Although, unless you've got a huge audience, that isn't particularly effective. Mm-hmm. The best thing you can do is publish to established publications, which are a bit like magazines within Medium. So, you know, I publish on Mac O'Clock, which is a, you know, a kind of Mac Apple based publication on Medium. There's thousands of these things. You can create your own
yours?
As well.
Is that yours?
No, I'm a co-editor on it, but it's not. Okay. I didn't start it. It's a guy in Athens who started it. But nice. But yeah, you can basically publish to as many of those publications as you want. It makes sense to stick within one niche. That is one thing I'd like to keep in mind. But
cool. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I assume it's Athens, Greece, and not like Athens, Georgia.
No, it's Athens, Greece.
That's cool. Okay, so I guess one more follow-up question on this. Do you find that being a co-editor on a publication has helped build your audience, or was that just kind of like a residual from you already building your audience?
No, it's really helped, yeah. So the reason, I mean, I've got 16,000 followers on Medium now, which has taken a long time to build. It's quite a slow growth on that compared to things like YouTube. But one of the key components of that has been my regular publishing through Mac O'Clock, because that has an established audience. So if a story goes through Mac O'Clock, it gets put in front of lots of people versus putting it through my own profile, basically.
That's really interesting, right? Because I write for the podcast host .com.
Yep.
And it's been great. I really enjoy having that as an outlet for like timely articles, and it's a paid gig, which is nice. But I don't know how much audience building it's done for me. Now, I did speak at their summit, and that was like huge for building my mailing list. But maybe I have some homework to do. Right, find a couple of podcast related publications on Medium, start my own, and get my content out that more out there more. Now, I will say, as we record this, it hasn't happened yet. But as it comes out, you're probably about a month in. You have a Medium.com cohort that you're hosting, right?
Yeah, so I'm not sure when this is being published, but like you say, maybe after the first cohort has gone live, possibly.
Yeah, this will be, people are listening in early May, if they're listening.
Okay,
the day
yeah,
it
so it's
out.
Been, a, yeah. Yeah, so the first one's been, in fact, it's quite a good time to talk about this because it will have happened. Hopefully it was a massive success.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll, future us has come back and it was a massive success.
Let's assume it was amazing, which I'm sure it will be. But basically, to cut a very long story short, I wrote an ebook last year about how to make money on Medium. And again, playing on that whole, you know, $2,000 a month thing that I've managed to do. Because clearly I've found something that works. I've found a process. I've done it for long enough now that I know it works. Yeah. So I built that process, or kind of condensed it into an ebook, and then started doing some free webinars about it, which were really well attended. I still do those actually, and perhaps we could put a link to them because,
they're
completely free and people can join. And they were, like I say, really popular. And then I thought, well, why don't I just go the full hog and start a proper academy for this and do a proper cohort-based live, you know, not pre-recorded, not really evergreen, full-on live cohort-based course, which I created. And like I say, by the time this has gone live, the first cohort will have been and gone. And it's an 8-week course. It's me presenting it. I've tried to keep the pricing fairly realistic because I think a lot of cohort-based courses, there was a boom, wasn't there, through 2020 to 20, probably very recently, really.
$799 to $2,000 or whatever for a cohort-based course.
Huge, huge fees. And to be fair to the people that were running them, people like Ali Abdal, they worked. You know, they made an awful lot of money from these courses. But I think that started, as we're recording now, that is starting to wane a bit. So I've very much kept that in mind. And The other reason I've kept that in mind is because I know that what I'm doing here isn't particularly well known. You know, people don't know what Medium is. They're probably putting a lot of faith in me being able to show them how to use it properly and become effective online writers and what have you. So I just wanted to share my learnings, really. And that's the other part of my business. You know, I'm a tech reviewer, but also I want to impart my knowledge and do it through these kind of cohorts and through free webinars and things. And I enjoy doing it, really, Joe. It is, obviously, it's a revenue maker for the business. Again, not being shy about that at all.
Yeah.
But I genuinely enjoy it because it's very different to talking about laptops and iPhones all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the beauty of the creator economy, right? I mean, that's why, I mean, this show started off as me interviewing other WordPress developers on how they built their WordPress plugins. But it's evolved to talking to creators about the creator economy. And like, that's the beauty of it, right? I get to talk about and teach you this thing I love that I do well. And I also get to make money doing it, which is super cool.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And it's such a big, I think I listened to one of your, I can't remember who it was that you were interviewing, but it was a fairly recent one. over the last couple of weeks, where you quoted the guest might have quoted the number, the revenue, the projected revenue for this creator economy per day, and it was something, it was in the billions, you know, by 2028 or something.
Yeah,
It's huge. It's just a massive industry.
Incredible. Absolutely. But you're making me dig back into my memory because
I wish I could remember who it was.
Yeah, if it's more recently, I could probably find it. But I'm like pretty far ahead. You know, I mean, like we're recording this and it's coming out in 2 months, so I'm pretty.
It's impressive.
Pretty excited about that. It's probably Jake Thomas. I'm gonna guess it was Jake.
Possibly, yeah.
Or maybe Drew Dillon. Like those are the two guys who probably it was. But anyway, check both of those out. All the show notes will be over at howibuiltit.com/312. Mark, if people want to learn more about you and what you're doing, where can they find you?
There's a couple of places, just to be greedy. The first one is markellisreviews.com. That's my main website, really. So that's where all of the blog posts I've just mentioned, that's where they live. You can find me, find my YouTube channel from there, or you can search for me on YouTube, obviously. The other thing that I would like to very quickly plug is Solo Club, which is that's my brand that I've built around the academy. So it's my kind of the educational part of my business. I'm helping other creators. So Solo Club is a bit of a play on the solopreneur phrase, which I didn't used to like, but I like it now because it kind of very neatly describes what I do.
It's like webinar, right? I used to hate webinar.
Yeah.
Now I do a webinar every month. So
you have to accept it, don't you? Yeah. Soloclub.online, that is where the academy lives, and that is where the free webinars you can join, and you can check out my ebook and that sort of stuff. And from both of those websites, you can get in touch with me directly as well if you want to.
Fantastic. Well, like I said, all of that will be in the show notes over at howibuiltit.com/312. In the pro show, we're going to talk about growing the YouTube channel, thoughts on YouTube podcasting, and then I'm going to ask you your webinar stack because I'm very curious about this right now. Probably the ebook. We'll see how much time there is. I want to be cognizant of your time, obviously. But thank you, Mark, so much for coming on the show and spending some time with us today.
Thanks, Joe. I've loved it. It's been brilliant.
Thank you for listening. Thanks to our sponsors. Again, you can find all of the show notes over at howibuiltit.com/312. You can also join the newsletter over there. I send tips and tricks, as all podcasters do, weekly, maybe multiple times a week. If you identify yourself as a podcaster, you'll get a bunch of emails and it'll be great. So again, that's over at howibuiltit.com/312. Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, get out there and build something.